welcome to the Charmed Life Podcast. My name is Tricia Carr, and I am your host. This episode is an installment in the mini-series or the stream that is running through my podcast as well as the YouTube channel, and that is Metaphysics of the Bible. Now, if you are new to this podcast, well, allow me to introduce myself for a moment. I am a spiritual teacher, and the spiritual teaching I'm referring to is metaphysical and mystical, and it is non-dogma. It is non-religious, in fact. But I do have a background in Christianity. In fact, as I was a youth, up to about a little past, technical adulthood, I was a Bible student, and I was studying to be a Christian minister. But then, well, the church part of it, the religious part of it and the dogma became a little too tight for me. Nevertheless, I actually did have quite a bit of spiritual growth and expansion while in the paradigm of Christian church. And in fact, when I was 11 years old, I had a light body activation when I had my baptism, which was 100% elected by me. My family did not go to church. In fact, there was a bit of resistance to church because of the pain and trauma they had all suffered through the dogma and the persecution coming directly from the church in the pulpit, and just the judgment that made, didn't make them feel, nothing can make you feel anything, but the judgment that to which they all responded in fear. Anyway, so this is a review of the incredibly magical content in the Bible. I do not think the Bible is infallible. This is just, quite frankly, impossible. If I tear out a page of the Bible, does it self-heal? Of course not. So it is not magical in that sense, not in a material sense. It is magical in the sense that it's inspiration that has flowed from humans. And it is a recording, some of it, of very magical experiences in the human lives of the times, particularly when we get to what is called the New Testament with Yeshua, Jesus Christ, is one of the examples of Christhood. And Christhood is the way that I teach it, or the way that I experience it, is also not limited to Yeshua, to Jesus. It is also considered that the Buddha was an embodiment of the Christhood frequency. And so what I'm going to break down in this episode is about half of Luke chapter 22. And I'm going to talk about some of the very psychic, intuitive displays made by Jesus. One of the things that we look at in this Metaphysics of the Bible series is the fact that intuitiveness, the energy healing, being a medium, all of these psychic, intuitive gifts and expressions are in alignment with Jesus, because Jesus was all of these things. And the church has cast it out. And it was very intentional thousands of years ago at this point. And it was done out of fear, but it was not done in alignment with the example or teachings of Jesus. And so that is part of what we look at. So we'll have a little side note, sort of tangent, just pointing out some of the very psychic moments that are exhibited in this particular chapter. But the main focus I want to talk about in this Luke chapter 22 is how Jesus demonstrates for us that we can create a karma-free zone. I've been talking about karma a little bit on the YouTube channel and in this podcast, so I'll link below the recent episodes. Yeah, I'm doing slightly different content on the YouTube channel and the podcast, at least more and more, if not exclusively from now on. But I will link those below if you want to hear a little bit more about karma, karma-free, how karma actually helps us, the different kinds of karma. And a karma-free zone is when we have, I'm going to break it down for you, but when we have actually aligned so sufficiently with our soul, or that then would be with the whole universe or with God, that we are free of karma. In a sense, we are perfect, which is a hard word, but we are in alignment so much so that we are not vibrating to any lessons that are wanting to be learned. We are actually in a moment of divine alignment, and that we can channel this and expand this vibration within our own aura and field, so much so that it becomes a zone, not just for our own individuality, but it's a zone of karma-free experience. Now, everyone has free will, of course, but this zone is so crystallized, and I'm going to talk about crystallizing the aura. This zone of karma-free experience is so crystallized as the individual is vibrating it, that the only option is for a person to choose by their own free will to have their karma, their pain, suffering, resistance, whatever it is, have it to be transmuted by this karma-free zone, or to go away, to be repelled by it. As this zone is crystallized and expanded, if you can visualize this, if you want to visualize this or have a sense of it, imagine you are pulling down, you are channeling light as an energy being, channeling light into your energy, and you are aligning with it. You are becoming it. You are identifying it. So the light that is filling your space, you, is continuing to fill until everything that is not the light is displaced and transmuted and changed into the light. This process continuing actually becomes the process of crystallizing your aura. Now, we are always doing this crystallization of our aura. And so what crystallizing means is, well, crystallization is something actually coming into form. And so one way you could think of it is that you're creating a thought form of your own aura as a perfect identity to source. And so crystallizing the aura, I want to really take a moment to highlight this. This is what the spiritual seeker is doing. So if you can think about this practice of crystallizing your aura, then it will help you to have more of a focus on your Christhood path, on your path of light, thinking about it as daily, hourly, moment to moment, crystallizing your aura, drawing in light, identifying to it, having your field be transformed into light, pure light, one light, one will. And this is the process of creating the karma-free zone. Now, what I'm getting at here as I'm going to dig into Luke 22 with Jesus is that Jesus created a karma-free zone now for himself. And he crystallized this so much and continued to crystallize this, that this karma-free zone expanded to his disciples, to the people who he was teaching, to his community, his country. And then it was able to actually have a moment of big bang, essentially, to where it actually encompassed the entire planet, his karma-free zone. This is possible. He demonstrates that it is possible. So beyond just embodying the I am, the one I am, beyond embodying the one will, he crystallized within himself by identifying to source, to one is all and all is one, and it expanded to include the whole planet. If but not for a moment, if but not for an offering. And what I'm getting to here is that this very moment of a global karma-free zone that was channeled through this avatar, this person, Jesus, is the reason why in, I would say, kind of our limited mind or our kind of diminutizing lens, why the church has said that Jesus took away the sins of the world. Are you getting this? Are you following this? He crystallized his aura and expanded it so much so as a karmic free zone that this was the feeling that is still echoing in our society and in the religion of Christianity. And perhaps for those of you who have never had anything to do with Christianity but have a place in your heart for Jesus, you're picking up on that frequency. And that is what these echoes, again, kind of like lost in translation a little bit, saying that Jesus took away the sins of the world because of that eternal now moment of a global karma-free zone. Let that set in a little bit if you want, if you need. And I'm going to dig into where I see this in Luke chapter 22. I'm going to read you about half of the chapter just to get us into it. And then I'm going to point out to you the specific moments that show us the karma-free zone had been created. And then we're going to see the sort of confirmation of it as he was actually on the cross. So let's take a little bit of a moment to just get into the material. I'm going to read from the chapter 22 of Luke from the New International Version, just because the language is kind of, you know, simple, plain. It's more modern. And as I said earlier, I don't believe in any physical book that humans can create and write to be like infallible. And certainly there's, talk about lost in translation. We have the original language. And we also have the First Council of Nicaea that intentionally curated these books to try to create a certain kind of dogma and religion to control the masses and blah, blah, blah. Nevertheless, I believe that there is magic that still exists and we must use our own discernment and our own heart. All of that is just to disclaim the translation and everything. I don't know if it matters. If you like the old-fashioned language of the King James Version, great. But, you know, I don't necessarily see a reason for that, at least not for this example. So let's go ahead and get into it. And if you want to just kind of sink in and allow your heart to just pick up the magical moments, and if you are someone who left the church like me, and if it makes you a little tender to be like, ugh, well, then maybe it's an opportunity to release the shadow of the persecution or the pain from the dogma. And if you have a tender spot for Jesus or some of the words that are the Bible, then maybe it's an opportunity to just hear it afresh. But let's listen with our hearts, shall we? Experience more abundance, magic, and joy. Working with your elemental guides can greatly enhance your creative powers as well as deepen your connection to a happy life. Work with your nature elemental guides is a weekend workshop, June 19th and 20th, 2021, taught by me, Trisha Carr. This workshop is designed to help you remember your elemental magic. Your elemental guides stand ready to help you activate your innate magic. Register now for a weekend of immersive education, techniques, and meditative journeys that will help you to connect with your elemental spirit guides. Luke chapter 22. Now the festival of unleavened bread, called the Passover, was approaching. And the chief priests and teachers of the law were looking for some way to get rid of Jesus, for they were afraid of the people. Then Satan entered Judas, called Iscariot, one of the 12. And Judas went to the chief priests and the officers of the temple guard and discussed with them how he might betray Jesus. They were delighted and agreed to give him money. He consented and watched for an opportunity to hand Jesus over to them when no crowd was present. Then came the day of the unleavened bread, on which the Passover lamb had been sacrificed. Jesus sent Peter and John, saying, "Go and make preparations for us to eat the Passover." "Where do you want us to prepare it?" they asked. He replied, "As you enter the city, a man carrying a jar of water will meet you. Follow him to the house that he enters, and say to the owner of the house, 'The teacher asks, where is the guest room where I may eat the Passover with my disciples?' He will show you a large room upstairs, all furnished. Make preparations there." They left and found things just as Jesus had told them. So they prepared for the Passover. When the hour came, Jesus and his apostles reclined at the table. And he said to them, "I have eagerly desired to eat this Passover with you before I suffer. For I tell you, I will not eat again until it finds fulfillment in the kingdom of God." After taking the cup, he gave thanks and said, "Take this and divide it among you. For I tell you, I will not drink again from the fruit of the vine until the kingdom of God comes." And he took bread, gave thanks and broke it, and gave it to them, saying, "This is my body given for you. Do this in remembrance of me." In the same way, after the supper, he took the cup, saying, "This cup is the new covenant in my blood, which is poured out for you. But the hand of him who is going to betray me is with mine on the table. The Son of Man will go as it has been decreed, but woe to that man who betrays him." They begin to question among themselves which of them it might be who would do this. A dispute also arose among them as to which of them was considered to be the greatest. Jesus said to them, "The kings of the Gentiles lord it over them, and those who exercise authority over them call themselves benefactors. But you are not like that. Instead, the greatest among you shall be like the youngest, and the one who rules like the one who serves. For who is greater, the one who is at the table or the one who serves? Is it not the one who is at the table? But I am among you as one who serves. You are those who have stood by me in my trials, and I confer on you a kingdom, just as my Father conferred one unto me, so that you may eat and drink at my table in my kingdom and sit on thrones, judging the 12 tribes of Israel. Simon, Simon, Satan has asked to sift all of you as wheat. But I have prayed for you, Simon, that your faith may not fail. And when you have turned back, strengthen your brothers." But he replied, "Lord, I am ready to go to prison and to death." Jesus answered, "I tell you, Peter, before the rooster crows today, you will deny me 3 times. And now we're just going to skip ahead to the next section that is pertinent to this episode today. And that's Jesus praying on the Mount of Olives. Verse 39. Jesus went out as usual to the Mount of Olives, and his disciples followed him. On reaching the place, he said to them, "Pray that you will not fall into temptation." He withdrew about a stone's throw beyond them, knelt down and prayed, "Father, if you are willing, take this cup from me. Yet not my will, but yours be done." An angel from heaven appeared to him and strengthened him. And being in anguish, he prayed more earnestly, and his sweat was like drops of blood falling to the ground. That concludes the reading. And now let's just talk a bit more about the crystallization of the aura, the creating a karma-free zone. We must remember that light casts out dark. Light is the true material of the universe. Light being a sort of metaphysical symbol, but it's quite literal as well. It's the vibration, it's the tonal frequency, it's the breathing or movement or expression of the one energy, God, if you like, or source. And in John 1:1, it says, "The Word was with God, and the Word was God." The Word being the expression of the one energy. And the fact that the one energy that God, the source, couldn't be unless it expressed, or it was entirely itself, yet it wanted to create and express. And that first expression is that word. That word itself is a direct replication. It is the progeny of the one light. And so it is light itself as well. It is the light. It is the breathing or the movement or the word of the one energy. So that is light. Light is the expression of creation, of creator. And that light casts out the dark because it is the closest thing to the one thing that is, the one thing that is the only true energy. As the experiencing, the traveling away from that one energy continues, then the light dims and dims and dims, and it becomes less like the one true reality, the one truth, the one energy. Therefore, the more potent light is always going to be that which casts out something that is less potent than it. It's just simply how it is. Light casts out dark. Back to that process of channeling the light, pulling in the light, identifying to it so that your individual energy becomes a replicate of it, a replication of it. It becomes identified to it. It outseats anything that is not the light. That's crystallizing your aura with light, expanding it and expanding it so that you're creating a karmic-free zone. A karma-free zone's continuing. And so if this process is making sense to you now, let me point out to you from Luke chapter 22, where we see Jesus doing this. First of all, he spends time with his fellows, with the disciples. And now, by the way, they are all disciples, including Jesus. Jesus is also in the discipline of Christhood, in the learning experience on that path with his disciples. He has the charge of being the teacher. And by the way, in this chapter, you hear him refer to himself as teacher, as son of man, and you don't hear him say son of God, although son of man, son of God are kind of interchangeable. What he is identifying, though, is brother. And as brother, we are all that first expression. We are all light. That is our truth. That is our reality. And we are all re-identifying to it. And so Jesus is, of course, among the disciples, the apostles, in the position of teacher. But he equates this to the one who is the servant, as in when he questions the disciples, well, who is greater, who is sitting at the table or the one who serves? And so in this, he is showing us that to be the teacher isn't actually exalted. It is the one who is there to be responsible for serving. And so he first, in this process of creating the karmic free zone, and in allowing this to expand so much so that we have at least one ripple, one moment of a global karma-free zone channeled through that individual, he first becomes one energy with his fellows. And then after he sufficiently bonds and empathically matches with their frequency, sampling and gathering it in, healing together, being vulnerable, he then goes to the Mount of Olives to pray. And this is when we see the moment that he is crystallizing his aura, turning it over to the light, releasing anything that is not that light. We see this karma-free zone when he says, it is confirmed, when he says, if you are willing, take this cup from me. Yet not my will, but yours be done. Not my will, but yours be done is the moment that he releases anything that is the not the light and aligns with the one will, the one frequency. This is the moment that he has created a karma-free zone. And then it continues to expand as he is communing with his disciples, as he is then taken to the fate that we know that has happened. And we see the moment where it is confirmed that his karma-free zone is, at least to those who are there present, when he says, forgive them for they know not what they do. He has become so aligned with the light as he is on that cross that he says to God, to the one energy, he has become so aligned with it that he is able to think completely like God, think completely like Source, who loves all of its children equally. Forgive them, for they know not what they do. He himself is a product, and he is seeing as the creator. Forgive them, for they know not what they do. This is the pivotal moment when we can see that it is shifting to the global karma-free zone. And so this example is possible for us. But as of course, you know, we have to make sure that we don't think of it like a human, like it's something to achieve. That's not the point. And it's not an assignment. We're all here on our own assignment. So it's really important for us to make sure we're not trying to achieve something like, you know, it's an award or a competition or somehow an outside validation. It is a gift. It is something to be comforted by. That we are capable of identifying to the light so sufficiently that all of our eternal karmic lessons are divine directives in that moment. If rippling through all of the others, all is aligned and learned. And the expansion is full. Once again, this is what I have been shown as I was conferring with Spirit about this, that this is the reason why humans have interpreted Jesus took away the sins of the world. Because in fact, it's not really possible. Well, I mean, in the semantics, sin just really means missing a mark, making a mistake. And then sin has, by the church and, you know, controlling mechanisms and thought forms and everything, become something that is like naughty, bad, need a spanking, need punishment. But sin really just means to make a mistake. So have you ever made a mistake? I mean, I know I have. So if we can make mistakes still, then the mechanism of making mistakes or sinning has not been taken from the world. I know that I'm being very literal, but I think that can help us to jog any of the conditioning around things if we get really literal. And the fact is that we also aren't, and this is the metaphysical understanding and the mystical perspective, is that, you know, philosophically, we are not here as a child being judged by a parent or a boss. That's what we're conditioned to. But in fact, we are fully grown souls. Now, of course, when we're children, but as we are one with that higher self, oversoul, and we make the decisions, even though we have guides, guardians, teachers in spirit and on the planet, we are actually sovereign individuals. So our mistakes are our own, our assignments are our own, and there's no one judging us. It's simply your sovereign free will, spiritual purity that is exploring, expanding, and contributing to the universe through that exploration and expansion. And so this is my offering to you, that it's not really possible to take away the sins of the world because sins are mistakes and I can make a mistake. But what I think the misinterpretation or the extrapolation is that Jesus created a karma free zone for the whole planet. And in that moment, there were no mistakes, or the perspective was owned. And we can, you know, we're talking about nonlinear time, that we're talking about the simultaneity. So we can be in that. We can be in that karma free zone, the global karma free zone, by our own soul action and by aligning with that eternal moment that Jesus channeled, as well as other avatars, masters. And simply, we do not need to elevate anyone above ourselves because we are the same soul essence, the same light as Jesus or the Buddha or any other guide or teacher who has gone before in some sense, if you will. And so that's what I think the karma-free zone has been interpreted to, the sins of the world being taken away. As promised, I want to just point out a few of the psychic moments, the demonstrations in this Luke chapter 22, that Jesus was an intuitive, was psychic, a medium, energy healer, of course. Interest, you know, and to just like kind of, again, decondition us from all of the darkness around your intuitive abilities or your spiritual abilities somehow being contrary to church. I mean, I guess it's contrary to a religion, because religions can make up any rules they want. Those are constructs of human beings. I was going to say constructs of man, because I'm a Gen Xer, and it used to be totally acceptable that man was the gender neutral reference to humanity. But it's actually appropriate at this time to say the constructs of man, because these constructs are so old that only men were allowed at the table. So you could hear it however you want if I say the constructs of man. All right. So psychic moments in Luke chapter 22. Then came the day of unleavened bread, on which the Passover lamb had been sacrificed. Jesus sent Peter and John, saying, "Go make preparations for us to eat the Passover." "Where do you want us to prepare it?" they asked. He replied, "As you enter the city, a man carrying a jar of water will meet you. Follow him into the house that he enters, and say to the owner of the house, 'The teacher asks, where is the guest room where I may eat the Passover with my disciples?' He will show you a large room upstairs, all furnished. Make preparations there." They left and found things just as Jesus had told them, so they prepared the Passover. All right, now you could say, oh, well, that's because Jesus had already like talked to this guy in advance, and maybe. But the way that I see this is that, Jesus just knew. Well, first of all, he says, "You'll see a man carrying a jar of water to meet you. And who will meet you." Now, yes, of course, maybe that guy carries that jar of water at the same time every day. And maybe that's how Jesus could say, there's going to be a dude carrying a jar of water if you go there. But what if Jesus just could psychically see that was going on over there and was telepathically in touch with this person who was able to, who wanted to host this Passover? And, you know, that's just, now, so this one isn't a proof, I guess, as much. It's just when I read it, sometimes it strikes me that way. Just like in a whole different part, when Jesus says, "I have other sheep who are not of this pen." This was when I was like back in my 20s, still in the church. And I read that and I had this moment of claircognizance where I was like, oh, he's talking about aliens. Other sheep who are not of this pen, you know. I think that's often or usually interpreted as like not just the nation of Israel. It's also the, you know, other nations on this planet, other pens on this planet. But I heard at that moment, like, he's talking about other planets. Anyway, so that's the way that is striking me right now, is that it's just totally a psychic vision, just Jesus and telepathically communicating with the heart of this person who was to host this Passover dinner. Now, the next one is, and by the way, that was 22, 7 through 13. And oh, the reason also I think it strikes me that way is because they say they left and found things just as Jesus had told them. That kind of stands out like, whoa, it's just like what he said. You know, like when someone, when you're kind of blown away by an intuitive evidence showing up. All right, moving on now to verse 21. And this one's a little obvious. Jesus said, but the hand of him who is going to betray me is with mine on the table. Now, this is just good old fashioned empathic reading. You know, it's intuitive. He's intuitively connected with everyone. You know, Peter didn't even know it himself. I don't think Peter was being dishonest when he was saying, no, 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 I'm going to go to death. I'm ready. He's like, yeah, dude, no, I can feel that energy in you that is going to result in this specific stuff. Now, it's not a predestination thing. It's just that sometimes when you're reading energy, time prediction of what's going to happen can be so precise, even though we have free will to make those changes. But sometimes you can just feel this is in such a strong momentum. It's going to turn out like this. You know what I mean? So that was a psychic prediction and a reading of his fellow. And he said, of course, Jesus, I tell you, before the rooster crows today, you will deny me 3 times. So he could see and feel specifically what was going to happen and when. And so that is psychic moment number 2, a Jesus psychic moment number 2 in Luke chapter 22. I mean, you can find them all over and everywhere. And the last thing I want to just point out, this is later on in the chapter, like toward the end of chapter 22, when Jesus is before Pilate and Herod, and they all ask Jesus, are you then the Son of God? And he replied, you say that I am. Now, this is not another installment of the psychic moment. What I am talking about here is just another metaphysical moment. You say that I am. Jesus is identifying to the real name of God, which is I am. Your I am, my I am. Every time I say I am using the name of God, my name of God, me, the God in me. I am using the name of God. The gift of my capacity, my sovereign use of the name of the source. That is another example of complete alignment. And that crystallization of light into the aura and the field and the whole expansion of it, having the karma free zone, the identity to source. You say that I am. This is how Jesus identified. Well, guys, I hope you enjoyed this. I sure did. And I want to remind you to check out the links in the description for some other cross-referencing episodes, either on the YouTube channel or in this podcast itself. You just may also, if you're listening to the podcast app, you just maybe want to scroll and you'll see any previous ones pretty recently that are along these lines. And on the YouTube channel, I do have a playlist of Metaphysics of the Bible, which is a little bit easier. The podcasts are getting more sophisticated to be able to do things like that. And there are different platforms to be able to create playlists and everything. So stay tuned for that. That's not in my hands, but I am being, you know, talked to by different platforms. And also Apple is creating a lot of different dynamic ways to engage. So anyway, you can just search Metaphysics of the Bible, Charmed Life with Tricia Carr, and you should be able to pull up other episodes if you prefer to listen. All right. Well, I would love to invite you to like, subscribe, share, comment, and leave a review on the podcast. If you do, that will boost me in the algorithm. And that algorithm, as we join together, we are creating more light in the world. And we're spreading that. And that's my offering to you, my request. If you have a moment to just pull over in your car, probably, and just scroll down in your app, you'll see a way to, you can leave just stars and no words, or you can just put down it's great or whatever you like. And every now and again, I go and check those. And if I see one that really, you know, feels so good and I just want to share it, then I'll read it on the air if you so. And I'll only mention the moniker that is attached with your profile. I won't like say your whole name. Okay. Well, I hope that you're enjoying these. I will be getting more out as spirit moves. Some of these are longer now. I'm channeling a lot of stuff in my Life Path 7 and in my bodily ascension, which I mentioned in the last episode, as I am doing some different things with my physical body and health. And it's been amazing. So I will be talking to you guys again real soon. Thanks for tuning in. I love you, whoever you are.